You are listening to the Family Business Podcast, the podcast aimed at delivering insights to help your family business thrive. I'm your host, Russ Hayworth, and each week I'll be bringing you interviews from family businesses and their advisors from all over the world. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Well, hello and welcome to this week's show. I'm Russ Hayworth, your host. And before we get into the show itself, I just wanted to read out our latest review. We've had 14 in total. Luckily, they have all been five-star reviews. So thank you to those that have been leaving those. We've had a new one this week, so I thought I'd read it out. And I will be doing that each week, assuming we get new reviews. So if you want to have your name read out on the podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. This week, the review has been left by BettyCat500, and her review, I'm assuming it's a her, is, "I'm loving this podcast, not only for the fact that it tackles the unique challenges faced by family businesses head on, but it provides insight and inspiration from the people who are making a success of it. Practical and thought-provoking listening." So firstly, I'm really pleased that you're enjoying the show. It is here to try and help people, so hopefully that's proven to be the case. But also a massive thank you to all of the guests that have appeared on the show so far. It couldn't have happened without them. You wouldn't want me just coming on every week and rambling on, so it's great to have guests on there to help share their knowledge, experiences and insights. And as I say, if you do want to leave a review and get that read out on the show, please head over to iTunes to do so. You can also get in touch with us via the website, which is www.fambizpodcast.com. There's a contact us page there, so if you click on the button, it will take you through to a form that you fill out, and that comes directly to me. And we'd be happy to, if you want to get in touch about any particular challenges you're facing within your family business, we'd be happy to see if we can help with any of that. And so now I'll pass you over to my interview with Josh Daspit, who is an assistant professor at Mississippi State University. And we look at the role of academic research in the family business field. Well, hello and welcome to the Family Business Podcast. Russ Hayworth here, your host. And I am joined today by Josh Daspit, who is an assistant professor at Mississippi State University over in the States. And he is involved in quite wide-reaching research into family businesses. And the topic of today's conversation is what role that research can play in helping family businesses to thrive. So perhaps you could give our audience a little bit more background as to your role, how you came to be doing it, and why the particular interest in family firms.
Sure. Well, let me first begin by saying thank you. You know, Russ, I certainly appreciate the invitation to chat with you about what I think is a very interesting topic. And I appreciate the opportunity to reach out to others, maybe share some research insights, things that we are working on in terms of family business research, share those insights with a broader audience of those interested in family business leaders, so on and so forth.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I am an assistant professor at Mississippi State University. And I am affiliated here with the Center of Family Enterprise Research. So on campus, we have a center that essentially that does family business research. And that center and the pursuit of that type of research is one of the strategic goals of the university. The center is housed in our management department. And, you know, in the big scope of family business, it is ranked one of the top research centers in the world. So wow. It has been a great honor and really a privilege to be able to work with this group of scholars who are doing some cutting edge kind of state of the art research. You know, I'm able to work with folks like Jim Chrisman, Danny Holt, Allison Pearson, Kinsey Madison, Rebecca Long, and many others who are well known within the scholarship area, the research area of family business. Now, I did not always do family business research. In fact, many folks that have, you know, kind of been around for a while, most of whom have not always done family business research. A few have, but family business research as an area of study is relatively new compared to academic disciplines. In fact, some will say that family business research today is kind of where, you know, entrepreneurship was, for example, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when that discipline was just starting to gain some traction. It experienced rapid growth. And of course, now we see, you know, entrepreneurship is kind of omnipresent. It's incorporated into most all business curriculum. It's kind of the buzzword in many industries and areas. So some have kind of related where family business is today as an area of study to, you know, where entrepreneurship was a while back. Now, I mentioned that I haven't always done family business research. I kind of got into family business research through my interest in innovation and knowledge and social exchange. That's what I did my dissertation on. And when this opportunity came to work here at Mississippi State, I realized that the context of family business was an extremely rich context to be able to examine some of those issues in. So there had not been, you know, much research and innovation at that time within the context of family business. Still understanding some of those exchange issues is relatively new and presents some positive challenges for us. And I found that to be really true. You know, family businesses are certainly unique in certain ways from non-family businesses. And it's been great for my research. I think it's been a great context to look at some of these innovation and knowledge and exchange phenomena in. And it's quite exciting, quite exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess as a kind of an opening question to the episode, which obviously is focusing on the role of this research in assisting family businesses, what role do you see the academic research playing in the specific areas of advancing family businesses? Because there's lots of, like you said, there's lots of research that is being undertaken at the moment. But there's not necessarily the means for families to gain access to that unless they're aware that it's out there.
Let me start with that part of your question about, you know, the role of academic research here. It's, you know, let me take a step back, actually, and say, you know, when we look into the hard sciences, into biology, chemistry, physics, so on and so forth, there we see researchers who are studying things like diseases, who are, you know, researching, you know, how to cure diseases and how to treat ailments within the scope of medicine and so on. Folks are looking at how to introduce and develop and develop new medical technologies. And all that comes from research. And the goal there is to take a scientific approach to understand, you know, when we administer this medication, for example, we get this result. Now, that's within the context of hard sciences. Family business and business in general is more of a social science. We aren't dealing with these kind of laws of nature. We're looking at more of the social dynamics. You can almost think of some areas of psychology, sociology, even insights from anthropology, and so on and so forth, to take this, you know, take what we know and examine it as a science. So our goal is to take a scientific approach to better understand how family businesses, how businesses in general, can enhance their competitive advantage. So it's less about, you know, offering recommendations that, you know, managers kind of manage by intuition, but rather giving them a framework of cause and effect, being able to say, hey, we know that when a family business experiences these conditions, here's what works.
Uh-huh.
And here's what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Here's what works to be able to achieve that sustained competitive advantage for the family business. Here's what doesn't work. So the role of academic research is really to provide more of a scientific understanding, again, to move away from that intuition-based governance. Mm-hmm. Although let me also say, intuition is helpful in many, many instances, but it's not always reliable.
Yeah.
So as researchers, as scientists, although we are different than, those researchers you see in a lab in some instances,
mm-hmm.
but largely the goal is the same, to be able to provide a scientific approach, to be able to understand causality, you know, A influences B, and how can we achieve that result? That's really the goal of what we're trying to do. And okay. as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, family business research is still in the earlier stage of development compared to other disciplines that have been around for, in some cases, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So we are growing at a rapid pace, and some of those insights are exciting. So ultimately, you know, when we know better, when we have more scientific understanding, we can do better, and we can help managers do better.
And does it make it harder for you to complete the research, given the fact that the sort of the research field is relatively young? Because if you've got, say, hundreds of years worth of data or science to kind of call upon to help the research, you could possibly get more conclusive results. But does it help or hinder the fact that we're at a relatively early stage in terms of this research?
A little bit of both. In some ways, it is more difficult because there are so many questions that remain.
Yeah.
Even if we look at research that's happened in management, looking at firms in general, a lot of research has happened in that discipline. But once you apply the family, you know, once you overlay the family system with the business system, we need to re-examine everything we know essentially about management, because that overlay of the family into the business creates a whole new set of dynamics.
Uh-huh.
So that raises so many new questions. So, you know, when you have so many areas to explore on one hand, that's a great thing, right? There's no shortage of work. That's job security.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it is also important. It's a bit of a challenge to find, you know, what is the trajectory that we take here? What's the most important question that we answer first?
Yeah. And I guess another thing that adds to the longevity of the research is that we're going to be constantly dealing with new socioeconomic groups, because technology is moving on as a very fast pace. Our understanding of the world is moving on at a very fast pace. And so that's going to affect and impact how businesses are run in the future, which I guess makes it firstly very exciting to be in the field of family business, but also it opens up the door to a huge amount of potential future research as well.
Absolutely. And one of my areas of interest in terms of research is innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And precisely as you mentioned, this is an interesting time to be able to study family firms from the perspective of how they innovate, mm-hmm. how they're able to use some of their assets and those things that make them unique to be better innovators, to be able to adapt to industries and markets, because those industries and markets are changing at a rate that we have never seen before. So that provides a really rich context for this specific area of study.
And so where do you get your sort of ideas or starting points for research from? Because presumably there has to be a basis of theory behind you then thinking, right, this justifies us going and researching this further. So do you have sort of brainstorming ideas as to what to look at next, or is it structured in a particular way?
Yeah, well, given the state of the field, that it's growing at such an enormous rate, such a rapid pace, there really is no shortage of ideas. Some of the ideas come from conferences that that I attend, and I'll speak for myself personally. Some of my ideas come from conferences. Some come from other research. Research and published studies are really great at answering questions, but they also create questions. So that is a good source of new ideas and developing new thoughts. As you mentioned, we have a foundation of theory on which we can build in the discipline. We have a foundation of insights on which we can build within the discipline of family business. We can also bring insights in from other disciplines. There's some really cool research happening now that is integrating family science research into family business. Wow. To really look at some of those nuances of, you know, how a family structure, how a family's history, how those interfamilial dynamics affect not only the family, but they affect the family business. So there's some kind of cool things that are happening there. And also, I will say for me personally, some of my richest ideas have come from talking to family businesses. I have an uncle, for example, who owns an air conditioning business. It's a family business in Texas. And it's quite hot in Texas. So, you know, they're doing some good business down there. But, you know, talking with him over holidays and over family dinners and those types of things to see what he's struggling with. What are some things that he's trying to do better as a manager and owner of a family business? And what things has he found are not such a problem? Sometimes looking at things that are easy is also a source of new ideas.
And I guess it must be exciting and or frustrating that there is so much that, that can be looked at, because it's almost, where do you start? You know, how do you pick when you've got so much to look at? How do you prioritize where to start the research?
Absolutely. And most of us, you know, most researchers have a fairly specific area of interest in which they study, you know, a specific topic. For me, it is innovation, knowledge, and social exchange. You know, looking at dynamics within the firm and how that affects innovation. So most of my focus lies in that area. Okay. So for most of us, it's about, you know, kind of keeping up with those trends, you know, kind of the latest things that are happening in your area of research. And so you're not having to look, you know, entirely across the field to look at everything. But remaining relatively focused can help you hone in on some interesting ideas to advance the field.
Fantastic. And one of the pieces of research that I came across that sort of brought my attention to was a paper that you have titled "Understanding Family Firm Innovation Heterogeneity." And then there's a subheading of the typology of family governance and socio-emotional wealth intentions. So this is a piece of research that you and a colleague at Mississippi State University completed. And to try and break down the content of that paper, can we start by an explanation as to what is meant by family business heterogeneity?
We know what, of course, what family business is, but heterogeneity essentially means differences or variation. You know, heterogeneity can be defined as those differences that are relatively stable or durable across firms, and in this instance, across family firms, that could lead to differences or variation in behavior and performance. So, what are those kind of stable differences across firms that ultimately result in differences across those family businesses in terms of behavior and performance? Okay. So some colleagues, in fact, Jim Chrisman and some of his colleagues have said very broadly, they've introduced a framework that suggests that in terms of heterogeneity and family business heterogeneity, that family firms tend to be different in terms of their goals, the way they govern, mm-hmm. and their resources.
Right.
So, you know, for a long time in research, or for a while in family business research, we focused on the differences between family businesses and non-family businesses, kind of what makes family businesses different than non-family, and, you know, why you can study them. Uh-huh. We're now at a point in the research where we have a fair understanding, a decent understanding of those differences between family and non-family firms. But we're starting to realize that, hey, you know, you can't say that all family businesses are different than non-family businesses in this way, because not all family businesses are the same.
Yeah.
So that's where this kind of proliferation of family business heterogeneity research has come from. It's recognizing that not all family businesses are the same. And this is beyond just size differences and, you know, performance differences, but even kind of internally, they're just not the same. So we need to understand that. And that's uh-huh. where that framework from Chrisman and his colleagues of looking at the goals, governance, and resources becomes useful. It gives us some direction to be able to look at differences in goals, differences in governance, and differences in resources among family businesses. Uh-huh. And when we know those, once we can start to identify that, hey, family firms vary in terms of the resources from, you know, X to Y, then we can start to develop some typologies and commonalities among family businesses, which allows us to get back to what we talked earlier, developing a more scientific approach and being able to better understand cause and effect uh-huh. among the specific types of family businesses. Uh-huh. So again, this is just, you know, by looking at those differences, we're able to get closer to the ultimate goal of understanding cause and effect, and ultimately being able to understand competitive advantage and outcomes such as that in the family business.
Uh-huh.
We looked at innovation heterogeneity. So our work there was to try to identify different types of family firms in terms of innovation. And as you mentioned, we essentially laid it out across two dimensions. We said that family firms can certainly vary in terms of their socio-emotional wealth intentions. And what that means is, you know, family businesses, like all businesses, have economic goals and they want to create financial wealth.
Uh-huh.
But family businesses are somewhat unique compared to non-family businesses in that they also have non-economic goals. They have what we call a desire to pursue and create socio-emotional wealth. So things like legacy. Uh-huh. You know, families want to develop a legacy, which I know you guys have talked about legacy
yeah.
and succession and all those things several times with the podcast.
Uh-huh.
So we said that family firms can vary in the extent to which they want to pursue those socio-emotional wealth goals. And they also vary in the extent to which family members are involved in the dominant coalition or in the guiding coalition of the firm. So on one hand, you can have a guiding coalition that's all family members, uh-huh. or maybe you also have non-family members involved there. So when you lay that out across those dimensions, we suggested that there are essentially four types of family firm innovators that emerge. On okay. one hand, you have very limited innovators. That's when the family firm has very restricted or short-term socio-emotional wealth intentions. Uh-huh. And when the firm coalition is composed primarily of family. And that limits innovation because in that instance, firms are focused just on what we can do immediately.
Uh-huh.
And they also are composed just of family members, and that restricts the knowledge diversity.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, family members all kind of tend to think similarly for the uh-huh. most part, have similar experiences, kind of speak, quote, the same language.
Yeah.
And that restricts the kind of the radical innovations that could occur.
Uh-huh.
Now, on the other hand, when family firms have very extended intentions, and they have non-family members involved, we call those types of firms active innovators. Those are the family firms that tend to make more sizable innovation investments, that they are willing and able to engage in radical innovations. And of course, in between those two, and kind of across that continuum, there also are intended innovators, those family firms that want to innovate but are restricted, and potential innovators, those family firms that have the kind of the ability to do it, but they don't have the right intentions.
Okay. So if there's a family business is listening to this now and thinking, we have the ambition to innovate and to have longer term economic and social economic goals, but we are a small family owned and run business. Would it be fair to suggest that they might want to look outside of the family in order to help facilitate that innovation if it's not something that is naturally able to be completed within the family group? To look outside could open the door to other things, but it could help with the implementation of that innovation.
Absolutely. And Russ, maybe I should have you on my research team, because that is one specific topic that I'm working on right now. So in that situation that you just outlined, it's possible that a family firm wants to innovate, but they just don't have the knowledge, the experience, the resources internally to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So what they could do is look outside the business for other knowledge, other knowledge resources, other ideas. Now, that process of looking outside the knowledge, identifying that knowledge, and then bringing it inside the firm to use is what we call in research an absorptive capacity. So some firms are really good at that process, right? They can go outside, identify knowledge, bring it in, and use it for some commercial means. Other firms have a lower absorptive capacity. They're less able to use those capabilities to absorb new knowledge. So one study I'm actually working on now is looking at how family dynamics affect that process, those capabilities of absorptive capacity.
Okay.
And, I don't want to give this away before before it's published, but essentially what we theorize is that family businesses are really good at using new knowledge once it's in the firm. Right? They speak, again, kind of the same language. They have similar experiences, so they can work really well together. But in some instances, family businesses are not as great in going outside the firm and identifying new knowledge. They just don't have as many or as diverse of knowledge resources. Their social networks aren't as diverse as a non-family top management team, right? That has folks with different backgrounds and different experiences and different contacts.
Yeah. And who might have worked outside of the business that they're in at the moment and can bring some degree of experience from that role as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we say on one hand, family businesses might have more of a restricted potential absorptive capacity that allows them to acquire new knowledge. But once that new knowledge is in the firm, they're able to leverage it better because they work so well together.
Yeah. And I guess, does the challenge then become, if, again, I'm imagining a family business that has a strong social, emotional drive, a goal to have this legacy and to have a business that is there for the future. But there might be a set of unknown unknowns out there as to what they don't know, they don't know, if that makes sense, that would restrict the ability to innovate. And if you know that you don't know something, you can go and seek out and find that and either bring somebody in externally or employ somebody or however that might look. But if it's something that they don't know, how would they overcome that?
There is certainly a risk. You know, if a family business partners with another firm to maybe learn from them in an attempt to identify, you know, what are other firms doing that maybe we don't know, or to gain some new insight and knowledge. Family businesses tend to be less likely to do that because that element of trust is not there.
Mm.
For most family businesses, that's a big thing. You know, they tend to be more conservative, more risk averse because of some of those economic and non-economic goals that they have, you know, passing the family business on to future generations and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trust is a big underlying factor. If the family business is able to partner with an organization that they do trust,
uh-huh.
Perhaps that's one way to be able to learn from them and help identify what they don't know that they don't know, right? The kind of mirror and you know, pay attention to what other firms do. Additionally, advisors become extremely important. Consultants become extremely important.
Uh-huh.
Those consultants that, again, that the family business knows and or trust, maybe has some experience with. Also working in family business groups. We don't see this too much in the U.S., but in other countries, family business groups are very prominent. And those two can be a way to still facilitate that inter-organizational trust, but gain access to new knowledge and gain insight into kind of processes and technologies and things that other firms are doing that potentially the family business could do.
Absolutely. And so from your research, obviously you've commented on some of the characteristics that exist within firms that mean they're probably more likely to successfully innovate. Are there any other more or any other common characteristics that exist? Could you, if I understand what you're saying, it's not necessarily linked to size. It's not linked to bigger family businesses do better because there's more heads around the table or whatever the dynamic may be there. But are there any other common characteristics that exist within those firms that successfully innovate that perhaps our audience can learn from?
You're right that it doesn't necessarily pertain to size, at least not directly. But I will say that when a family firm grows from, you know, being maybe a small mom and pop type store to being a larger organization, to employing non-family members, maybe non-family managers, as it grows in size, it also starts to usually professionalize.
Uh-huh.
And as the family firm professionalizes, you know, it's bringing non-family managers and members in, it is creating more formalized HR policies and practices for recruitment and onboarding and training and so on and so forth. And we know through research that professionalization, that process of professionalization, leads to increased performance. That family firms that are more professionalized have better performance.
Okay.
Now, I will say this. You know, we recently published a study that builds on that and introduces this concept, or actually measures this concept of bifurcation bias.
Okay.
And what that means is that, you know, within a family firm, there can be two groups of employees, family members and non-family members.
Uh-huh.
And anytime that there is a bias in policies or procedures that tend to favor one group or the other, we find that significantly limits the benefits of professionalization on firm performance.
Okay.
So anytime that either the family members are favored in policies, or in some instances, maybe non-family members are favored through some of the policies, maybe they're formal policies or informal policies, that actually undermines some of those benefits that come from professionalization. So the takeaway there is to be sure to treat family members and non-family members equally, both formally and informally, which kind of sounds logical. And like, oh, of course, we wouldn't treat family members differently or one way or the other. But you'd be so surprised, right? Sometimes it is there's an explicit difference, right? An actual codified difference in policies or procedures that favor one group or the other. Sometimes it's not as explicit.
Yeah,
but it is perceived by one group or the other. And just that perception of inequitable treatment can limit the firm's performance when it as it becomes more professionalized.
And sometimes in that scenario, the professionalization leads to the implementation of these new sort of policies and HR side of things. And the wording of it and the documentation of it suggests that applies to everybody. But there can sometimes be an expectation from perhaps senior family members that it doesn't necessarily apply to the kids, for example. It's got, yes, it's there, it's written down, but we all understand that doesn't really apply. And that kind of supposition, I guess, is perhaps what's dangerous in what you're saying there. Is that if it's written down that it should apply to everybody, its application should apply to everybody, not just those, as you say, either within the family or outside the family.
Absolutely. And, you know, we tend to think, hey, it's a family business, so family members are those that receive the benefit. But sometimes family members are held to a higher level of expectation, and therefore, non-family members are favored in, you know, some evaluations or things like that. Uh-huh. So we need to be careful from both sides of that equation to make sure that both family and non-family are treated equally, that no group is favored.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that because of the nature of family firms, I guess this depends on some of the makeup that you've spoken about already, But are family firms more likely to look to innovate? Does that solely depend on their longer-term goals, or is the fact that they're family-owned and able to sort of bounce ideas off each other mean that they can implement innovation quicker?
You know, I would say that compared to non-family firms, family firms aren't necessarily better innovators or worse innovators, but they tend to innovate differently.
Okay.
Specifically, family businesses tend to be more efficient with their innovations. You know, innovation essentially comes down to two things. There are some innovation inputs. You know, a business will make strategic investments into innovating. And then there are innovation outputs, those kind of results that come from the innovation. So we can look at innovation as a process of innovation inputs and outputs. Uh-huh. And what research has shown, this is a study that came out I think last year or year before from Patricio Duran, Nadine Kammerlander, and some of their colleagues. What they find is that family firms are more likely to make fewer investments in innovation. But with those innovation investments that they make, they obtain better results.
Okay.
In other words, family firms are able to do more with less. Uh-huh. So they can make fewer investments. But once they decide to make that innovation investment, they're able to better exploit it, better able to take advantage of that investment.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is kind of a cool, interesting insight.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, And which also underscores the importance for family business managers to, you know, be really careful and cautious and strategic with the investments that you make. Because compared to non-family firms, you may be less likely to make innovation investments, but those ones that you make, you're more likely to be committed to. So I think that's certainly an interesting takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, we've spoken about innovation as an area that you're particularly excited about and interested in. Are there other areas or gaps in family business research that really excite you at the moment?
There are. As I mentioned, there are many, many areas where some exciting things are happening. For me, personally, I am interested in looking into how the social dynamics, how that social capital within the family firm affects firm capabilities, how it affects firm behaviors, strategic firm behaviors. Uh-huh. You know, getting back to some of these effects on innovation, things like absorptive capacity that we mentioned earlier. You know, how exactly does that social capital that family members have, how does that capital, when it's in the business, how do those dynamics affect the firm's ability to do certain things? Okay. In some instances, as we highlighted, it could actually restrict the firm's capability to do something. In other instances, other capabilities might be enhanced. So one thing that interests me is looking at how we can further enhance those benefits and minimize those restrictive influences. So what are some specific mechanisms and things that we can ultimately recommend to family business leaders to be able to do in their firm to get kind of the best of both worlds? Uh-huh. Right? Family firms are different than non-family firms in many ways. One way is their social capital and social dynamics. Uh-huh. More specifically, family firms can have a far greater level of social capital than non-family firms just by the nature of their relationships.
Yeah.
So that's one reason that looking at things like innovation and some of those concepts in the context of family business is so interesting, because it's a richer context than non-family firms because of that even greater level of potential that comes from things like that additional social capital, right? It would be at a greater level in the family business versus a non-family business. And that heightened level can lead to even greater effects on the firm and ultimately even greater competitive advantage.
Fantastic. And I've got a couple more questions on the sort of specifics of the research that you undertake. When you've decided to pick a subject area or a particular area to research, do you then approach a number of family firms to ask them to participate in this kind of research, or do you have data that's available anyway that you then analyze, or a mixture of the two?
It's a mixture of the two. It depends on the research question. It depends on what we're looking at in that particular study. For some studies, we might have data. We might have some archival data that we can use from different databases to test certain relationships. For other research questions, especially some of these research questions that get to or that get at internal social dynamics, understanding the family, understanding specific relationships in the family business, those aren't usually captured in archival data and databases. So we do need to work with family businesses to answer those questions. So, you know, for any family businesses out there that get a request from a researcher to answer a survey or to do an interview, that's where it's coming from.
Right. Okay.
And we certainly appreciate participation in those types of activities. It contributes to the science. It contributes to us understanding that cause and effect. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you're looking at firm level effects, right, how does this impact the firm? For us, we need to find, you know, we need a sample that's large enough to be able to study and generalize. So it becomes difficult, unless you're doing a really in-depth study on one family firm or a few family firms, sometimes it becomes a challenge to work with, 200, 400, 500 firms and have them bond so that we can have a large enough sample to find meaningful results that can be generalized. Uh-huh. So anytime, any family business participant is able to provide that insight, it's very much appreciated.
Yeah. And they're helping themselves and the wider family business world by doing so, aren't they?
Absolutely. And maybe it's indirectly, but it is certainly a contribution to this, to the growing field and to the state of what we know as a science of family business.
Hmm. Fantastic. Thank you. And then in terms of sort of making sure or making it easy for firms to access the outcomes of this research. Now you're working at Mississippi State University, so presumably the students there are being taught the findings from your research and other things that they can then take out to the field at a later date. But how else do these messages get out to families who may be suffering from something that they don't necessarily know that there's research there for?
It's great that we as academics and researchers are doing this research, but if those findings are never translated, if they're never shared with those that can actually implement the findings, then you lose a lot of the value.
Yeah.
You lose all the value. So that is a challenge for all disciplines. We tend to, or we do, publish in academic journals, uh-huh. which can sometimes be difficult for non-academics to translate and understand and say, hey, what the heck does this even mean?
Yeah.
So there have been some efforts to produce summaries, synopses of kind of recent research insights. Family Business Review, which is the leading family business academic journal, uh-huh. publishes easy to read summaries, they call them precis, of current research. So through FFI, Family Firm Institute, individuals can access FBR uh-huh. and access to those brief synopses. And they're usually pretty good about breaking down the insights and findings of an article into a few bullet points or a short paragraph.
Uh-huh.
Additionally, any family business manager or leader that's interested can, of course, attend, any of the academic conferences that we have. There's the Family Enterprise Research Conference, FERC, which happens every year, IFERA, many others around the world. I'm also the social media editor for Family Business Review. And in that role, I work to translate the insights from recent articles. So anyone that's interested can subscribe to that account at FBR Journal on uh-huh. Twitter.
Fantastic.
And follow our tweets. Yeah. Get some insight. And some of those are, aimed towards other academics. Some of those are specifically translated for managers. But as you know, we've got to be pretty succinct with those tweets. So it tends to get right to the point.
Uh-huh.
Also, FFI has publications like The Practitioner, which feature research insights, and I think they do a pretty good job. And there are several other publications like that that do a good job at translating that. And I, too, even on my personal Twitter account, at Josh Daspid, work to share some insights, things related to family business, and things related to business in general that I think are interesting.
Uh-huh. And what we'll do in the show notes is to provide links to all of those sites and Twitter handles, etc., for our audience to go and check those things out. And I think in particular with things like Twitter, it's a nice, easy way. If you're following those accounts, you don't necessarily have to click on the link for everything that comes up. But if there's something that comes up that piques your interest, you can just go, oh, that's something that's good for me. I'll click on the link and it takes you through to read a little bit more about it. So it's a good way of kind of keeping abreast of things without having to deep dive into every bit of research to see whether it's applicable to your business or not.
Absolutely. A nice, quick way to acquire some new ideas, some new knowledge, just as we mentioned before.
Mm. Fantastic. Last couple of questions, Josh. So the first one is, do you think there is a particular challenge or opportunity that family businesses are facing in the future?
You know, for academics, for researchers of family business, I think one challenge for us is to remain relevant. Mm-hmm. The state of family business as a discipline, and as we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, you know, even industries in which family businesses are competing and markets are changing so rapidly, it's important for us as researchers to remain relevant, to stay focused and connected to family, focused on and connected to family firms, is vitally important. In fact, if there are any family firms or family firm leaders that want to stay engaged, stay involved, I invite them to contact me. Mm-hmm. I'll be more than happy to share specifics of, you know, certain research that we're doing, talk about more details, or find ways for them to be better connected to what we're doing. I think those partnerships are so important, and they are beneficial for both parties, right? Mm-hmm. We as academics can learn more, we can remain relevant, and family business leaders can gain some of the interesting, helpful, state-of-the-art insights that can potentially provide a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And for family firms, I see that there are several challenges. And of course, family business leaders can see these every day. One of those challenges is, you know, that there are certainly benefits from the family being involved in the business. Uh-huh. Great benefits that allow for the potential of competitive advantage beyond that of a comparable non-family firm. But the challenge is using those resources, using those dynamics in a way that delivers that value. Uh-huh. As we discussed, those dynamics can restrict certain behaviors. It can restrict certain capabilities within the family firm, but it can also enhance other things. So it's a challenge to kind of be ambidextrous, if you will. It's a challenge for the family firm to be able to do sometimes two opposite things at the same time and do both of them well. Yeah. To be able to, for example, go out and explore new knowledge, to be creative, to develop new partnerships, but at the same time, come back into the firm and be able to exploit that knowledge quickly, efficiently, and, you know, create something from it. Uh-huh. That's challenging, but so important to family firms and firms in general to remain ambidextrous and have that balance in terms of innovation, in terms of, you know, balancing professionalization. Ideally, family firms can be professionalized and gain those performance benefits, but at the same time, finding that balance as to not over-professionalize. You don't want to sacrifice those dynamics that create the richness of a family business.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great bit of advice. I guess finally, the last question is, where can our audience find out more about you? You've mentioned Twitter, obviously, and we'll link that up. But I think we got in contact through LinkedIn.
I am on LinkedIn. Certainly, you can follow me at Twitter. My personal account is at Josh Daspit. Again, I work with Family Business Review. Family Business Review's Twitter account is at FBR Journal. Uh-huh. You could certainly, certainly open to corresponding by email. My email is josh.daspit@msstate.edu. That stands for Mississippi State. I will be moving to Texas State University over the summer. Okay. So if for some reason you can't find me at Mississippi State, quick Google search and find me at Texas State University, which is over near the Austin area in Texas. So many ways to contact me. As I mentioned, I'm extremely excited and welcome the opportunity to talk directly with any family business leaders to see if there are ways to partner, if there are opportunities to kind of further develop these win-win type of relationships.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm guessing that goes for other professionals who work with family business as well, if they've got any particular insights or issues that they're facing, that they can perhaps start the ball rolling there as well.
Absolutely. Of course, I don't want to speak for everyone, but yeah. I would say by and large, you know, the field of family business is, in my experience, really unique, not only in terms of the research that we're doing, but the community of scholars is one like no other discipline that I've seen. Many of the research and academics and even advisors, consultants, as you've had on the show, are so willing to help, willing to be involved, willing to chat, that it's really great to have such a supportive network to be able to discuss some of these issues and think through. And again, that's not something you find in all academic disciplines, but pleased to be a member of this community that is so well respected in that regard.
Yeah, like I think that in some areas it can become very competitive, can't it? And I think that given that the common goal is to help others thrive with the work that we're doing, it makes it a very, as you say, a very nice community to be part of.
And it's an exciting time. It is an exciting time because family business research is growing at a rate that we've never seen before. You know, one kind of interesting statistic that Pramodita Sharma mentioned, she is the former editor of Family Business Review. She has an editorial where she outlines kind of the trajectory of family business research and notes that prior to 1970 and all the years before that, all the decades before that, there were only about 100 academic articles published. Now, from 1970 to 1980, there were about 300. In the following decade, there were about 1,000.
Right.
And more recently, there have been upwards of 5,000, 6,000. So you just map that out, you can see that we are on a very exponential trajectory, you know, it's growing exponentially.
Absolutely.
So I think it's an exciting time. There are a lot of cool, interesting, fun questions to tackle. And, you know, working together and building those partnerships between academics and family business leaders is the way to go.
Absolutely. Completely agree. Brilliant. I think that's a great note to end on. So thank you very much for your time and for your insights for agreeing to be on the show.
Absolutely. And thank you again for the invitation. Thank you for the opportunity to potentially reach a broader audience and share some of these insights. And also thank you and your team for working with this podcast, developing it, and creating a forum for exchange. I think that is a great thing. And really appreciate it. I look forward to the new episodes every time they're released. So.
Thank you. It's nice to hear. That's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to leave us a review, please feel free to do so on iTunes. If you want to get in touch, you can find out more information at www.fambizpodcast.com. We'll see you again soon.